Welcome to the Chalk Talk Gym podcast, where we explore insights into healthcare that help uncover new opportunities for growth and success. I'm your host, Jim Jordan. Our guest today is Dr. Danielle Plummer. She's a third-generation pharmacist, and she's a passionate advocate for women's health. Today, she joins us to share her unique perspective on the challenges and opportunities in today's healthcare landscape. She has a diverse background spanning retail pharmacy, hospital pharmacy, and medical affairs, and Danielle leverages her expertise to support women navigating the complexities of maternal health. Through her innovative blog-turned-consulting business, she empowers women worldwide by providing personalized medication guidance during pregnancy. Danielle's journey has led her to identify gaps in the healthcare system and fueled her determination to drive positive change. In this episode, we explore the evolving role of the pharmacist, the power of the patient in terms of advocacy, and the potential for collaboration and technology to transform healthcare delivery. Danielle's insights shed light on the importance of interdisciplinary care teams, health equity, and the need for systemic improvements to better serve our patients. So Danielle, tell me and the audience a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, hi, I'm Dr. Danielle Plummer. I'm a pharmacist, but I have my hands in many different pots, as we like to say in healthcare, where many practitioners then have one. We are trained to be jack of all trades, and then some do go on to specialties, but I found many trades that I work with, and it's led me to this interesting place. How I got here, though, a little bit about myself. I'm a third-generation pharmacist and a mom of three now adult daughters and a lovely stepdaughter. So Jimmy and I were just chatting before this. You have four adult daughters. I'd say I'm in the same boat as well. But through my pregnancies, I was very ill. And it was in pharmacy school that I went to after I had my three pregnancies that I learned how we can treat patients and pregnant women who had that disease state, which is called hyperemesis gravidarum. And was wondering why nobody spoke to me about nutrition through my pregnancies or options we have, trial and error, how to decide what medications are safe in pregnancy, and started a blog, and the blog grew into consulting business. And here I am today working with women around the world to help them decide on medication safety in their pregnancies using a science called pharmacogenetics. I also, though, have a background in retail pharmacy and hospital pharmacy and do work full-time in medical affairs. So I just want to put a disclaimer out that anything I talk about today is just my own experience and opinions and not related to any organization for which I work or volunteer. But all of this has brought me to a place where I've seen our broken healthcare system and am doing my share to fix these pieces and bring it all together for the best of patient safety.
So we were talking earlier, I have my side hustle is I have a healthcare data center where I track business models, and it's a nonprofit. That's been my side passion, which is what led to this podcast. But I came from a similar background as yourself. You've been in these bigger companies where you're trained on the system and how it works. So we have the advantage of actually understanding those components of it and then having a very personal experience. So how long have you been doing this consulting?
Started with a blog in 2019. I actually, when I went to leave retail pharmacy, retail pharmacy is in my blood. I love it. I love working with my patients. There's a change happening, a huge change. And I am grateful I left before the pandemic hit. But while that change is going on, I knew I had to be in other spaces. So I actually wanted to go to work in medical affairs, which I do now and I do love. But I hired a pharmacist that specializes in resumes to look at my resume and help me update it. And she said, you're an entrepreneur. And I actually have since found my happy spaces as an entrepreneur. I like being with a big corporation where I have the freedom to really just work my heart off and accomplish at my own time and my own pace and rhythm, which obviously matches the company's goals, but without being micromanaged. So I started this blog in 2019 after going to a conference for pharmacist entrepreneurs. I went with a dozen ideas and walked going, I have to do this because I have this knowledge. Pregnancy, I don't know if Jim or any of your listeners know, but in the United States, we have a very serious problem right now where we have the highest maternal mortality rates of any developed country. So we have more women dying because of pregnancy And the government considers that either the year or the 9 months they're pregnant or the year following, depending which study or statistic. Some will say up to 3 months following giving birth. And in fact, just a week and a half ago, there was a Kansas City cheerleader who passed away after having a stillborn baby and then having sepsis. And every day we read about this in the newspaper. And you have to think, why is this happening in the United States? And a lot of it is because of this broken healthcare system that we have. There's many reasons, but almost all of it is preventable and should not be happening. So this blog turns into a consulting business. So now I'm on year five, I would say, for this. And it's my side business, right? Because I'm really fortunate to be in a space where I have medical knowledge. I understand our healthcare system better than most. I don't think anyone understands it completely. And women from around the world are reaching out to me going, my doctor doesn't understand, or they're telling me this is normal. And a lot of it's old wives' tales, even from the time of Freud, saying, oh, you're supposed to be sick when you're pregnant. It's fine. It'll go away at 12 weeks. And unfortunately, for many women, that doesn't happen. And now when you look at our maternal health, more women having difficulty becoming pregnant, more women with postpartum depression than before, or other what we call comorbid disease states. So all these women that if you are told to take medications when you're pregnant, it's scary. And we think back to the thalidomide disaster in Europe in the 1950s and 60s, where women were told, hey, go ahead and take this med to help your nausea. And then their babies were born very deformed. If anyone of the younger generation now doesn't know that story, do Google it because it's a lesson to learn from. Because of that, though, pregnant women have been excluded from clinical trials, and it's a lot of retrospective data that we look at. And it's a very scary and overwhelming feeling. I guess my big plug is to have a pharmacist on your maternal health team to help decide pros versus cons, risk versus benefit, and decide which medications are safest for you if you are going to take medications while you're pregnant or preparing for pregnancy or recovering from pregnancy. That's the consulting.
So we were joking before, we didn't know where this would go. I'm actually working with a client who is self-funding. She's a physician, a clamp for C-sections. And the data in the United States is we are ranked right with Nigeria. We're way down there. And it's just terribly sad. And my daughter, my youngest daughter, is a nurse, and she's worked in the baby unit. And she's shocked by the lack of education that people in certain communities don't have. And it's an access issue, right? And so illiteracy is one of the biggest challenges. And lastly, I'll quote my wife, who says that this was a man's issue would be solved by now. So it's
100%.
So I'd say it so you don't have to say it.
There's a lot of disparity that it just takes literally the village. It's going to take all of us to fix that health equity issue, the access issue, and even women with and families, right? With great healthcare providers, there's just a broken system with insurance companies dictating a lot of care. Who do you see for care? How far or close you are? In this case of this specific disease state, it's safer to go to an infusion clinic to get IV nutrition with electrolytes and vitamins on at least three times a week. But insurance companies are saying, hey, we're not going to pay for that. Or some families have maybe an HSA or an FSA account where other families don't. And unfortunately, even with good insurance, our deductibles, our claims, our co-pays are unaffordable, even for most, I want to say, maybe middle-class Americans. So it's everybody. It's affecting everybody.
So what moment did you realize that this blog, which was a passion, was going to actually turn into something bigger? What was the event that happened?
When I started getting emails from women literally around the world going, help. And so it's not just a U.S. issue. We talked about these maternal mortality rates, but women around the world, it goes back to a time where we had family members, we had a community to support, and we don't have that anymore. In fact, I just got back from a conference for oncology research. So when you look at the cancer space of research, it's phenomenal. I felt like I was walking almost through a science fiction movie. This research is brilliant. And it's very targeted therapies. And we can look at the DNA. It's a science called translation, where they're looking at how to take the DNA of maybe the tumor you have and then go, okay, this is the best treatment for you. Or we're going to create a treatment to target that specific coding. And with women's health, we don't have that quite there yet. It's a doctor here at the School of Medicine had told me that we're decades behind oncology. But one of the sessions I went to on health equity looked at patients from university in Virginia, not of Virginia. I think it was Commonwealth in Virginia, and looked at patients in that area that saw doctors in the area, but the study was out of that Commonwealth Virginia University, and then looked at patients in Puerto Rico, and even found that the results showed of this health equity study that the patients in Puerto Rico were potentially less educated and lower income. However, they felt better supported because they had that community throughout their cancer treatment and their cancer care. And I would bet it's the same thing for pregnant women as well. You are going to work every day. You are trying to take care of maybe other family members, a house. It's a rat race a lot of us live in. And while it's wonderful, women have a choice now whether we want to stay home, not all women, but some women, right, to stay home, whether we want to work. We have opportunities, but it's also very isolating and it takes that community to really support. And we need everyone in our healthcare team to work cohesively to take care of that pregnant women so that they're not falling through those gaps in our system.
It strikes me the similarity between a conversation I had with a person who's running long-term care in nursing homes. The challenge is that no one lives near their parents anymore. And It struck me in my neighborhood, there's a little baby boom going on. And I was out walking the dog and started talking to one of the women that has had a child, and she has no family here. And we just have this conversation like, that must be hard. And I think what you're seeing in that community in Puerto Rico is that I used to say, everyone says it's quality time, but in the quantity, you find the quality, right? That the little question that comes out of that little inference that comes out when you're with people for a long time. And if you're just visiting, it's not the same. It really isn't. So good for you. So you've become that family source in a sense.
I love that perspective because It's not just pregnant women. You talk about living near parents, and it's a joke with me and my mom because when I was a teenager, I left home. I literally moved to Japan. I was an ice skater at the time. I went to do a show there as a dancer and an ice skater. And I said, oh my gosh, I want to be as far away from my mom as possible, the teenager in me. And here I am decades later. I literally 6 years ago bought a house 5 minutes from my parents. And I think we take care of each other as much. And fortunately, my dad and my mom are still going strong. In fact, I have to go to my mother's dance recitals. But because of that's where I've stepped into this unofficial patient advocacy space for my parents and their whole community. So they live in Sun City. Everyone, I used to think 55 and up sounded old. It's now young to me. But my mom jokes every time I have a birthday, I'm a year closer to moving into Sun City. But it's amazing. Like all the time she's going to her friends' 90th birthday parties or 100th birthday parties. I found like they found the fountain of youth, but it's because of that community. And then when they get stuck in this healthcare system going, I can't get an appointment with my cardiologist. I can't get an appointment with my neurologist. You know, who do you know who my friend could see? Or can you help me decipher this bill? Or who do we talk to about billing from that hospital? I'm their go-to person. So it's a struggle. And I actually just reached out to another friend of mine after I had a personal issue. Fortunately, it was important. And really in the big picture, it was preventative. And I was like, hey, I just wanted to see what's going on with this. And I thought it was a copay and it ended up going toward the deductible. And 4 months later, I got this $300 bill in the mail. And I said, hey, I understand our healthcare system better than most. Why did I not see this coming? And it's going to just take all of us to support each other and make it through those health issue that we may encounter through our life.
So what strikes me is that when you start getting that sort of scale that you're getting of people reaching out, you start realizing there's not enough of you, and you actually need to invest in technology, lead generation, newsletters, customer relation management systems. Tell me about that part of your journey, because that's something that when you start getting that success and it starts moving, you don't really think much about it. Because I'm sure like you, we just opened our WordPress and started blogging, right? That's how we started.
It is exactly what I did. And it's interesting because my undergraduate degree is in hospitality. So I have that business background. Didn't stay in it too long because I was married to the military and we moved all the time. And it was later than I went back to school to get my doctor of pharmacy degree. But I thought I understood a little bit of business, and that was definitely a big challenge. So when you talk about the moving pieces, I still struggle with that. I definitely need a virtual assistant. I do have a full-time job I absolutely love. spending my days talking to doctors about a specific disease state and what's available to help their patients with that disease state. I spent the last 2 years working in biomarkers, and now I'm with a different product. But because of that, I really do need strong systems in place for my other consulting work that I do. So yeah, I changed CRMs a couple times. What newsletter? I actually hired one of my daughter's friends to help me. Social media is not my strength. It doesn't come naturally to me. But the information is so important. And I was actually just talking to another, he's actually a podcaster consultant that was like, oh, Jim, you and I just talked about that. We should have this on YouTube, right? We should be videoing this. And how do we feel? We're like, oh, the editing, who handles those systems? So a lot of when I went to the conference for pharmacist entrepreneurs, that was the one thing, like, one, what you have to say is more important than how you look. That was one of my big takeaways. But the other is hire people for those that I'm great at medication consultations, understanding your meds. I can look at a list of a dozen meds and see which ones are going to interact with each other, contraindicate with each other, right? Synergistically work together, which will be covered from your insurance or not, how to afford medications if they're not covered on your insurance. Like, I have that eye for that. But when it comes to sending out weekly newsletters or posting my blogs or creating taglines or Google SEO, social media, any of that, I definitely need to outsource that. And that's been a journey in itself, trying different platforms, different, like I said, daughters, friends, and different methods to make it work. Well, it's a journey.
And then you realize that when you first start out, you're spending $1,000 a month on this and you're making $100. So it really is a passion. I congratulate you for that. Something in the news recently, I was reading the Times this week about Ozempic and increase in pregnancy. Did you read that? And I'm just curious. I'm sure the audience would love to get your take on that.
I did not read. Oh, actually, no, I did read this one. And I apologize because I did not prepare this and I didn't have study. But I did, what I got out of it, if my memory serves me correctly here, is that because it's difficult to become pregnant if you are overweight or diabetic, and that's not a black and white blanket statement. But when that weight comes off, depending how overweight the woman is, that weight comes off, then it becomes easier to become pregnant. And that is my takeaway from that. So inadvertently,
I saw something on what's POS?
PCOS.
PCOS. There was also some improvement in that, I thought I saw, which was striking to me.
Again, it's related to the hormones that are being secreted through these being overweight when you get that weight off. But you know what? I wouldn't even say it's just overweight. It's a hormone imbalance and it's all correlated together, not necessarily causation, but there is a correlation. So when you can get those hormones balanced, and I'm not just talking estrogen or progesterone, there's a lot of other hormones that are even cortisol levels, insulin levels. Women who are at risk for diabetes, right? We test glucose where we should be also testing insulin. So there's a lot of balancing that needs to be going on. When that comes into balance, then it's easier to become pregnant.
I think what we're discovering, and I was telling you before, I'm working on a grant with some really brilliant professors where they're taking immunology, neuroscience, biology, AI, and the microbiome and trying to learn about learning systems. And it started with cancer research, as you were talking about. And I think what we're learning is we are complex systems. And sharing earlier that I have a wellness doctor, and when I had started seeing him, I just couldn't lose some weight. And so he gave me an estrogen pill. And apparently when you get over a certain percent body fat, testosterone starts converting to estrogen. And so I remember going to the pharmacist and he pulled me aside and said, this is breast cancer. Like, what's going on here? And I explained it. And literally after taking it for 90 days, I started shedding weight and really just took it for that 90-day period. So I think that we were talking earlier, our doctors are so specialized, right? And the two groups that I find really interesting to me are the PharmDs and the nephrologists, because you're chemists, right? And you're looking at its systems. So how do you keep track of all the rapid changes that are going on in this market?
It's a great question. There are different subscription services that can send you, even Google Scholar alerts. Yeah. If there's a disease state you're following, put that in there. And then they're going to email you through my main work. I always have a resource library, PubMed search. And what's crazy now with social media, we can use it to the good side of social media in LinkedIn, because I have a network of pharmacists that are working in maternal health. They're posting the latest data as well in the publications. And I also go to a lot of conferences. So I get to see scientific updates even before they've been published in the big sources. This conference I just returned from yesterday literally had, about 1,000 posters on cancer research. It was almost overwhelming. So it's, okay, which type of cancer am I looking into? And you talk about the gut biome, colorectal cancer, anything we do with our GI tract just really plays into the whole body system. I work with a lot of pharmacists who have stepped out of, I like to say, the box, figuratively and literally, and they now work in functional medicine pharmacy. And they talk about how oral birth controls affect the bacteria balance in our gut. And that plays into so many other roles, even headaches and anxiety. If we can balance that natural flora, the good, healthy flora, with probiotic and prebiotic foods, then it's amazing what else can happen in the body.
I think that we're learning that there's, when people say that you used your gut, you had the feeling in your gut, they're actually discovering that there's as many cells there that represent your brain as what's in your brain. So I think that, again, we're at the point where one of the purposes of this grant is that if we think of any scientific specialty, you have the tail of the distribution and all the really cool stuff is on the outside. And if you're a biologist looking at this data out there, but you're not using it for what you're using it for. And so what AI is going to allow us to do is take all those tails and start moving them around, but it's actually shaking up the science of research.
You've brought a good point to the table, because through these past couple of years, and I've been working in so many different areas of maternal health and with pharmacy, I've met amazing clinicians and I've met amazing business people who have started apps that can really help women throughout their pregnancy, a lot of them as well, to help with that health equity. But again, they're individual, they're silos. And how do we get all of that to work together? The technology in a lot of cases is there, but it's not in the hands of the patients and the practitioners and the support team, the family members, the case managers, the respiratory therapists, the nurse practitioners or physician's assistants, or even the case management, anyone who's helping that patient, as you were saying, your wife has helped other people with disease states that she has recovered from. And here I am with my parents and all their friends. So we have the technology there, but it's not in a cohesive, easy to access space with our EHRs, our electronic health records, our systems. Where I live in Las Vegas, it's extremely broken. There is no cohesiveness from your primary care doctor to your specialty doctor to your insurance. And even like I mentioned already in my own case, I just want to say, hey, what's up with this? Why am I, in my case, it was snoring. I go, why am I snoring? And I wanted to see when it sent me in this crazy journey where 4 months later, I get this $300 bill in the mail. And I say, wait a minute. And I thought this was a copay for $40. So again, if I'm working with this, imagine those who have serious disease states who don't have that funding, like you had briefly mentioned, to get to the right care, get to the right people. When pregnant women reach out to me and they say, I am not being taken seriously, I'm not being heard, I tell them, always bring a patient advocate with you. And we do have paid patient advocates. There are hospitals that you can ask to speak to their case manager, or just bring your significant other, just having that person there, and then write down, if they deny you a treatment or they say something that doesn't sit right, or you feel like you're not getting that response, tell them, I want that written in my electronic health record. And unfortunately, that's, you have to stand up for yourself. It was actually my third pregnancy. I was working at a WIC overseas office. So I was a military spouse at the time. I did not know much about our WIC program. It was absolutely fantastic. So somebody a few years prior said, hey, our military family stationed overseas don't have this benefit that those stateside would have. And in, I think it was 2004, it was funded by the Department of Defense, opposed to where stateside, it's the Department of Health and Agriculture, to get our pregnant women and our newborns and young children off to a healthy start. And it was my coworker who was running that office on this small overseas base with me that first said, you have to be your own advocate. And this was before I went to pharmacy school. And her words, I am just so grateful for, because that's just what stayed with me. And that's why I started the blog to pay this forward. You asked another question too, what systems are in place? What can we do? The government started a program called ARPA-H. It was based off our defense program from decades ago called DARPA. And I wanted to pursue this. I had the opportunity to work in our maternal health in the United States with this government-funded program. I ended up in this other role that I absolutely love and I hope to stay in a long time. But if anybody is out there, that was one of the ideas. If you want to pursue this, like I said, I know all these great business people and healthcare practitioners who have this technology, but we don't have anyone piecing it together. That is one of the programs I wanted to pitch to ARPA-H. So if anyone out there is interested in this space, please, you could reach out to me and I will put you in the right contacts or just Google it, because that need is there.
It's interesting because one of the jobs I had prior to doing what I'm doing now was working for a nonprofit and for-profit venture fund. And our goal was to help university technology come out and form companies. And so one of the things that struck me on the healthcare IT front is the high failure rate that was occurring in our community. And so we were one incubator that was focused on healthcare and life sciences. And there was another general incubator, part of the Ben Franklin system, which is really famous and really talented people. And they had success with IT. So what we realized is they were having a high failure rate on IT that was focused on healthcare IT, and we were having high failure rate. And what it came to be is that you need the IT people to be involved because they just know how to make things simple. And in healthcare, we tend to make things complex, yet they have to work within today's rules. And so you almost need them to team up. But something you said struck me. My healthcare data site, I do these various research reports periodically. And one of the ones I did in the past several months was our physician shortage and all the associated activities. So we're going to be 130,000 physicians short. And the challenge is to change that timing. It takes 15 years to make one. And if you look at it on a health policy perspective, by the time you would turn that up, the baby boomers would all be expired and we would have too many doctors. But we can turn around nurse practitioners and physician assistants. And in that report, I had identified what their skill sets are legally, what they can do, and what they are doing. And they're not really performing to the level of things that they've been trained on for whatever reason. We're saying that's going to have to change. You said PharmD and functional medicine. I got a hint there that there's something going on in this space where perhaps you all aren't able to have the licensing height that you could for your training, which probably had something to do with physicians and holding control. But when you're just not going to have enough, we need to open this up. So tell me what you think about that. Is there a skill set there where you can contribute to this?
Oh my gosh. Is there a skill set? You brought such an important point, and it's not the physicians directly, but their overseeing association that is just legally very hard. We'll leave it at that. Yes. And it's interesting. One of the rotations I did when I was in pharmacy school, I think I went, like many people, I went to pharmacy school going, I only know retail pharmacy. That's what my dad did. That's what my grandfathers did. That's what I thought I wanted to do decades ago. As a teenager, I worked in retail pharmacy and my eyes were open. So I did this rotation in the intensive care unit at a small community hospital in Virginia. And it was amazing. So we had about 12 beds and we rounded as a team. We had the MDs and the PharmDs and, like I said, nurse practitioner or the nurse would present the patient and then say, hey, this is what's going on. And then the doctor would give us updates. And then they would look to the registered dietitian and the case manager and the PharmD. And we would talk about, okay, this is what we're doing to this patient. And it was this whole health system. It was this care. And that patient, the outcomes were fantastic because you had this team. I feel like the doctors going through med school now, they love having pharmacists on our team. And in my work, when I was a per diem pharmacist, I worked in the emergency room. I worked in PACU and pre-op and making sure those patients going in and out of surgery had the right meds on board and had the medication reconciliations done. And we always have pharmacists now in the ICU or potentially INC, but it's that transition of care. You mentioned long-term care. Pharmacists are not trained to count pills and put them in a bottle. And I always would joke that we need better public relations. We need a PR campaign so the whole world knows what pharmacists are trained for and do. We are clinically trained. Most pharmacists now are going on to do 1 or 2 year residencies. They're board certified in specialty disease states. We are clinicians to the highest level that we have up to 8+ years of classes, including pharmacology and pharmaceutics and pharmacotherapeutics. And we understand how the body systems all work together and what happens to that medication as you either ingest it or absorb it, or it's injected into you, where these other specialties don't have that same training. But that's why it's so important for all of us to work together. And it's just been a political battle where apparently pharmacists are the only healthcare practitioners not considered to be so by CMS.
Say one more time. I'm not sure I processed that.
So the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services do not consider pharmacists healthcare providers to where we can bill for our consultations.
Really?
And really. And again, 8 to 10 years of university, doctorate degrees, board certifications, right? Residency trained. Why is that? And it's just, my mom used to say that maybe we should have unionized years ago. There are pharmacists now trying to unionize because we've just been pushed down as a profession. And now there's a resurgence going, wait, we have this knowledge. We literally have doctorate degrees. We've spent years training in hospitals and specialty areas with disease states like pediatrics and oncology and geriatrics, and with a plethora of medications on the market now and the specialty medications we have. And everything's a monoclonal antibody or a IV infusion, or as you're talking about with the weight loss medications like Ozempic now, as one of many that are out there, you have to have a really deep understanding of the science behind it to understand how it works. So yeah, tell me what we can do to get us practicing to the height of our license.
I think that when you hear about lobbying and advocacy groups, it generally has a negative tone to it from most people's perspective. But the reality is that when you have people doing what they're doing every day, they need a group that can help articulate what they do and the impact of how they do it. And I think even the ability of having PharmD be functional medicine folks is actually relatively new too, if I'm correct, right?
Absolutely. And it's just, I want to say maybe 10 years that we've had. It's interesting, timing of everything many years ago, and we've seen movies on this, where they go, the robots are going to take over. Jim, you mentioned AI changing healthcare. And it's interesting, when I started working for this big corporate retail chain, and we have robots filling medications, and now we have pharmacy technicians giving immunizations, pharmacists with these degrees, and not every, I will put the caveat now, not every pharmacist has a doctorate degree. It changed, I don't have the exact year, I want to say maybe 25 years ago. But so we do have a lot of pharmacists out there that don't, but I'll give an example. My mom's dad was the last pharmacist in the state of Connecticut to become one by apprenticeship. Yeah. I love this story. I think it was the 1940s at the time. My dad, when he went to pharmacy school in the 1960s, it was a 5-year degree. It was a bachelor's plus 1 more year. The doctorate degree did exist at some point. I don't know when it came into fashion, but not everyone went ahead for that. And then I think maybe at this point, 25 years ago or so, and I'll have to check the exact year it happened, that there were no longer Bachelor of Pharmacy college programs in the United States. It's only the doctorate degree. So when I attended, I said, why do I need to know about EKGs? I remember being in my cardiology class going, why do I have to learn an EKG? I'm going to go work for my retail store. And boy, am I eating my words now. It's incredible when you understand how to read those EKGs and which antiarrhythmic medications and how they work and what's best for you. And to give a personal story, my dad's been on Sotalol for decades. And one time he was in the hospital and they did a formulary change and he almost died because of it, because it's just a therapeutic substitution because of what was on their formulary there. And he knows, no, I have to be on Sotalol. Now I can look at his DNA and go, yep, that's the one for you. But it's interesting, like we have this training, it's time to work with AI and all this technology we have to really practice to the height of our license and our education, but it is going to take some changes in our government laws to get us there.
And I think it's actually probably going to be the pressure of the rising cost of healthcare. I always track the annual national healthcare expenditure growth to gross domestic product, and it's always higher. We're approaching 20% and moving, where the rest of the world is 10 to 12%. And what people don't realize what that really means is the rest of the world is taking that extra 10% and investing it in innovation, right? So it's like an investment. If you think about a startup or you think about a new technology, right? They're investing in that, whereas we're burning it up in a healthcare setting. And it impacts generations. I've told this story before that I met this woman whose son had to come home from college to take care of her, and he was working at the Burger King. And it's not that working at Burger King is, there's nothing wrong with that, but he was in school for engineering. And his potential, his ability to contribute to the economy might be less than what it was. And it's all because of healthcare. So what's the biggest lesson you've learned on your journey?
I said it once, I'll say again, you have to be your own advocate. Don't be afraid to ask for support, to ask questions. If something isn't making sense to you, don't wait to find out. Ask the questions ahead of time. I'd like to share for anyone who is on Medicare, one of the things you can do during open enrollment every year, put your medications in to the website and your plans year to year. And it's going to be a difference of hundreds, if not thousands of dollars that is going to be your expense if you don't keep up with those formulary changes. So don't assume that just because one insurance plan is best for you 1 year, look, you might be better off on a different plan the following year. So just continue to have that village, that support. You shared that story just now with a son having to quit college to come home to care of mom. I mentioned being back. I bought this house. You're my parents, to help each other. And we have to support each other, whether you're in healthcare or not. And if you are, that interdisciplinary care team makes all the difference. So put your support team together, both family, friends, and which healthcare providers. You mentioned a shortage of doctors. When we look at the amount of urologists, the amount of neurologists, the amount of nephrologists in the United States, I'm not even going to begin to talk about obstetricians. It's very difficult to become an obstetrician. And then I learned in my last role in medical affairs that there's a specialty called maternal fetal medicine specialists. So not only do they go to med school, they then go on to do their 4 years of residency. Then they go on to do another 3 to 4 years of a fellowship. They literally have as much education as a neurosurgeon. These are who a lot of our pregnant women with high-risk pregnancy should be seeing, and there's just not enough of them. I think about 2,500 in the United States, somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 of them. So the cost of going to med school, you mentioned the 15 years, right? So now they're putting off families, all these conferences I've gotten to attend. Fortunately, there's always a session, unfortunately, about financial wellness for the soon to be or now doctor. And they're starting life now in their 30s, maybe even 40s. And they're difficult financially. So we're going to have less and less. And like you said, look to your care team, ask your pharmacist if you have questions. And if that pharmacist doesn't have time, I'd say ask him for an appointment, pull him aside. Yeah,
I'm curious if there's a correlation with what you just said, that we have older mothers. I think in the past year, we've seen postpartum being covered, which was not, my sister Jennifer will tell this story too, so I'll tell it out loud. It's just the funniest story. She's four older brothers, so she's tough as nails. And brother-in-law says, beautiful and tough. It's just the greatest combination in a wife. And she had postpartum and back really didn't do anything, but she read online that if you run, and so she's running down the street and a neighbor stops her and says, are you okay? Because she's crying. She goes, I have postpartum and I'm just going to keep going. And 3 weeks later, she had taken herself out of it. So again, not a scientific study by any point, but it just shows how lonely and isolated women were 20 years ago when she was having children, and just the change today. And I wonder if these older women are being a little more confident in their advocacy for themselves might have made this change. And I think that's really important, the concept of advocacy. So
can I add one more thing?
Yeah, please.
Menopause is now a big buzzword at every conference I attend in industry and with women, where it was once, I just had this conversation with a lot of people where it was once nobody wanted to talk about it. And now we're like, wait a minute, why are we not talking about this? Perimenopause, postmenopause. And one of the pharmacists I talked about that I met at this conference, one of the pharmacists at this pharmacist entrepreneur conference, she actually was one of the founders, and her whole business now is helping women through menopause. And I just want to share a story like you're running. I've been told, I'm not there yet, but I've been told hot yoga helps when you do end up getting hot flashes. So again, not scientifically
you just
proven,
used to perpetually
but,
being hot is what.
But getting that oxygen flowing, the mental mindset in line, getting your hormones balanced. There's a lot we can do on a more natural, holistic side, and then go to medications when it's needed and make sure you're choosing the right medications for your body.
Perfect. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the audience?
I do have a new blog I'm starting called pregnancyvomiting.com. So I'm always open to guest blogs as well. There's so much information to share, to put to bed, old wives' tales, and reach out anytime. I'm not doing a lot of one-on-one consulting anymore just because of my time limitations, but I do have a course coming out soon, and I am always here to support anyone, especially pharmacists who feel very stuck in the box. I have an ebook on how I transitioned into the medical industry, and I absolutely love what I do. So, Jim, thank you for everything you do and for having me on. And let's work together as a whole, our country, our world, and get the healthcare situation improved.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning into the Chalk Talk Jim podcast. For resources, show notes, and ways to get in touch, visit us at chalktalkjim.com.